So winter may be here, but it's warm where we are. Warm and sunny in Hollywood, Florida. Florida, where you can go to retire and all sorts of things. But we have another exciting and wonderful episode of Guitar Talk with John and Jamie. This is John.
This is Jamie, and I know that's not how that goes.
Yes, we know, but continue, because the reason this line is important is because today we think it was important to talk about
money.
It's a shame. Wait, it's a crime?
I'm putting the guitar down.
Okay, so here we are. And Jamie and I were just kind of thinking about, how money works. And, I'm 51 and started playing in 1974. And the pay scale really hasn't changed for, like, you know, casual gigs. You know, $50 to $100 to go and play a club. Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's that famous thing that went out on the internet where somebody actually broke down what you actually make when you're playing, when you consider the 10,000 hours that went into you being good enough to actually go to the gig, and then all the money you spent on your equipment, and then what it cost you when you were in rehearsal. So you're making like something like 8 cents an hour when you go and do like a casual $100 gig.
Yeah, I love those gigs that are like, hey, man, you want to do this gig? It's only 2 hours or it's only 3 hours, but it pays, you know, and it's always $100. It's $100. You know, $100 gigs haven't changed in like 25 years.
Yeah, for 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah, I mean, they've always been $100 gigs. And I was actually making more doing casuals when I was just kind of starting to play out, you know, in the 80s.
Yeah.
And I was actually making a little more for casuals.
But this is in the States. Now, when I lived in Nice, one of the things that was really cool was my girlfriend turned me on to this, is that the government, okay, so if you're a working musician, mm-hmm. and you go do a casual gig, on average, it's 150 to 200 euro, which is like closer to $200 to $300, plus the venue feeds you, so you get a meal out of it. And if you can prove that you work a certain number of gigs a month, so that, in other words, that your livelihood is actually based on you doing this, mm-hmm. you get this thing called the paper, le papier. And you would get this from the club owners, and they were very not happy to give them out, because what happens is you do a 200 euro gig, get dinner. If you get the paper, the government gives you another 200 euro. So they match whatever the club gave you. But you had to have a certain number of them. Mm-hmm. So in other words, if you were really a working musician and your livelihood was dependent on playing in clubs, Marjorie, the woman who I was playing with, we did enough gigs where I couldn't get it because I was illegal. But we would get the paper, le papier, for her. So we would make, you know, like 200 euro each for the gig. And then she'd make an extra 200 euro from the government.
That's crazy.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
Like they actually cared about the arts.
Yeah. You don't really get that a lot here.
You don't really get that a lot.
You're the hired help here, basically, is what it comes down to.
Oh, my God. You know?
There's been a lot of funny things circulating on the internet lately. People have been posting things to the to Facebook. My favorite one recently was the one where there was an ad that like a club owner had placed for, you know, for musicians to come and play.
Particularly like that one.
Yeah. And, you know, there's no money, but it's great exposure. And then a guy replied to the guy, you know, it's, hey, I'm looking to start up a thing at my house and, you know, want you to come and promote you can come and promote your restaurant, you know, and you know, prepare food for me and all my friends. And,
yeah.
And there's no money, but it's great exposure for your restaurant.
Actually, that's not the one. My favorite one is the one where the guy, the agent is like, call 6 plumbers to come work for you on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
And whatever they charge you, we'll do it for half.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
That's another good one.
That was, you know, like, I like that.
These gigs, they don't pay that much, you know, for like either a club or, you know, casuals just tend to pay more in general. But, you know, playing in clubs, you know, it's just a...
But cost of living back then. But let's say you were doing 4 nights a week. Let's say you were doing 4 nights a week at $100 a pop back in 1978. Okay, $400 a week or $1,600 a month was, you know, a good chunk towards your living expenses. Because I remember, like, I rented a studio, like a place like where, you know, I live, like a studio place, probably $350, $400 a month back then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now, you know, rent is $1,500, $1,800 a month for a studio place to live. And you've got to figure out how to make that kind of money. And $100 a night doesn't cut it. Plus, that doesn't even cover, like, we're not talking about union dues. We're not talking about health insurance. We're not talking about car expenses or equipment. I mean, just... You know,
yeah, it's like the cost of living has come up, but the pay for what you're getting for these gigs has remained the same.
And exactly.
That's where you know, the frustrating thing is, and back, you know, I remember like the, here again, we sound like old guys.
We do always sound like old guys, but that's kind of the charm of the show.
But, you know, there was a time, like when I started playing out, when I started like working a lot as a musician, you know, you would get in a band and you would play 4 or 5 nights at a club. You know, it was like, Tuesday through Saturday for the month of March.
Yep.
You know, and it would be, you know, you'd be at the Red Lion. And then like the next month you'd be at another club. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I came up in San Diego and there was you know, just tons of places you'd constantly be working. And you know, all your friends that were musicians, they'd all be playing, oh, where are you this month? Oh, I'm over here. Okay, I'm over here.
Yep.
And
now it's 45 minutes.
Yeah, now it's like you can't get residencies like that, working bands. At least, you know, not in LA, you know, where
I have a residency where I'm thinking in my mind of. That didn't really make sense, did it?
No.
I aspire to residencies.
You know, but it's... I mean, I do a thing at the Big Potato every Monday night.
That's a residency.
That's a residency, but I mean, I'm talking about like, you know, like a week, you know, like 4 or 5 nights a week, you know, at one club.
Yes, I remember that, actually. I remember that in my youth where you would actually get, yeah. You know, like we would go, I lived in Colorado when I was younger, and we would go to Utah.
Yeah.
And there were all these clubs and circuits in Utah, and the ski resorts where you'd play for 8 to 10 days. And
yeah.
Go to the next one and play for 8 to 10 days, and you were there every night. And
yeah, you can make a living. You know, you make a living, and then that, and then during the day, I was teaching. You know,
yep.
Teaching, giving guitar lessons, mm-hmm. And you have like a handful of students, and you know, you're making. You're not getting rich, but you're making. You're covering. You're not. You're making a. You know, you have enough to buy food.
Well, we were younger then, also our needs were less. I mean, we didn't have kids. We didn't have mortgages. We didn't have that. I mean, the thing that the sort of discrepancy is that, you know, as we've aged and the cost of living, and it's funny, is as our skills and abilities have increased and our quality of performance, you know, increased, the expectation now is more and more for less and less.
Yeah.
You know, I do a charity gig. I did a charity gig for the Weingart Foundation, and I'm saying these guys' names out loud because it's important that I can express this sentiment. I did a gig for them every year for 4 years where I brought the best guys in LA to come do, you know, whatever their theme was, you know, Casablanca or, you know, big band jazz or, you know, whatever the gig was, right? For like no money. Like, you know, because it was a charity thing, right? And yeah. So I would do, and I would make sure everybody in the band got paid. And I didn't, you know, I play for free and I would, you know, do all the charts and I'd do everything. And I liked doing the thing. And then 1 year they just decided they wanted to spend less money and never called me. After I did like, you know, 4 or 5 years of doing this for these guys. And, you know.
Right, spend less money than free?
Well, I was free. The other guys, they had to pay a couple $100 a piece.
All right.
But still, I mean, the level, I mean, these were high scale. Like they were generating at these events like a couple $100,000 in donations, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the idea of spending like $1,000 of that couple $100,000 to hire musicians or $1,500 to hire musicians was like too much for them, you know? And like we would bring our own PA, except for the last year, we brought our own PAs every year, you know, and I brought great, great musicians in, you know, I'd rehearse them. I'd write arrangements. We would do, you know, it was quality stuff. Yeah. And I was just thinking about the inequity of that is like, you know, that we get to the point where our skill levels are really amazing. But that people don't want to play. Like, I don't know about you, but I've got to the point where I don't necessarily believe it's a real gig until someone says, there's really not that much money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Somebody has to say that sentence before I go, oh, okay, so there's actual work, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's, I don't know. It's funny. It's frustrating because, you know, you want to try and make a living but it's just very hard. It's very hard to. I know a lot of guys that, you know, they rely on road gigs, but then again, there's not a lot of road gigs these days.
Anymore, yeah.
You know? So, well, then the road gigs aren't paying that much, you know?
What about like forgetting the idea of livelihood and just talking about how do we generate revenue? Like most of the models for what we traditionally knew about generating revenue of, you know, either getting record deals or going on the road or, you know, being hired as a sideman, they're kind of dissolving.
Well, record deals dissolved a long time ago. That's not an answer. I mean, what is a record deal anymore? There really is no such thing.
Right.
And if there is, it's probably bogus.
Yeah.
And it's just going to wind up costing you money in the end. You know, going on the road is always, you know, if you can find a band that has a budget that's hiring, you know, that's hiring sideman musicians and will take you out. You know, if you guys are doing it, that I know that they still get work and they go on the road, but that's scaled way back and it's become a lot more scarce. And I don't know. I mean, I know a lot of people that have just turned to, you know, they're going back to work. The dreaded day job, you know. Mm-hmm. I know several musicians that have done that. They're working during the day.
The dreaded day job.
You know, I don't know. Or they're teaching, you know, they're teaching more. And, mm-hmm. you know, I teach at MI still. I'm just there not very much, you know. But I know guys that are there. It's like a full-time job for them, you know, during mm-hmm. the week. And that's where they make the majority of their living expenses.
What about expenses?
They're not, you know, come from that.
What are your expenses? Like, in other words, like to be a working musician, where do we spend money, time, and attention?
Well, you always try and keep the overhead low, but it's, you know, again, like you say, it's just, you know, certain things. I always admire the guys that have gotten to the same age as me, but they've managed to keep their, you know, their overhead nice and low. You know, it's like they have rent, and they may or may not have like a small car payment. Most of them don't. And then that's it. And then they can make enough to cover it. But, you know, like I have a kid, and, you know, that's really about it. I mean, I pay rent on a place in LA, and I don't have a car payment. I have a kid, and then, you know, there's utilities and food.
Let's not gloss over that I have a kid part. Because, you know, I got a 20 and I'm just about to have a 7. So, I mean, I have a kid is not a small thing. Like, in our age group, I have a kid is a big expense. Like, our priorities and our money
go to that. It's a huge expense. Yeah, it's a huge expense. But I feel like sometimes, you know, like if I harp on that to other musicians that don't have kids, they're like, well, hey, man, whose fault is that? You know, I get that.
Fuck that. Sorry, you know, I'd say fuck that.
That's my opinion too, but now I understand that it's like, no, I have a kid.
First priority.
Who's my extremely top priority? Yeah. And, you know, and if it came down to it, to where his well-being and his survival meant that I was going to have to get a 40 to 60 hour a week job at IBM, you know, then I would do it without even thinking.
IBM still hires people?
I don't know. I'm just grabbing IBM because I'm so out of touch with, like, the regular workforce.
I'm rubbing off of you.
No, you're out of touch with music.
I didn't mean that sentence. I'm taking that sentence back, too. I took that sentence back.
You're out of touch with music. I'm out of touch with everything else.
Okay. You know, so my hidden expenses, aside from, you know, the kids, I think about, like, maintenance of the instruments. Maintenance of my equipment. You have much more of an engineering background than I do, so you're able to do a lot of stuff on your own.
What kind of maintenance of your instruments requires?
I don't know, like,
once a year, so you got to get tubes for your amp, and change strings on your guitar. And
you setups. I'm not really great with the whole setup thing. I'm just not.
How often do you have your guitar set up? I get my guitar set up like once every 5 years.
I don't know. And then, okay, strings. I don't pay for picks. I don't pay for strings anymore. Actually, I just got my endorsement last year for strings. And that was after some 40 years of spending a fortune on strings.
Yeah.
I don't know. I buy gear. But that's true. As I've gotten – oh, it's funny. As I've gotten older and done this, I get more equipment that I need for either free or for, you know, artist deals or less money. So my expenses went down. But I still spend money. And then when I used to study, like, I pay for lessons or for materials to learn from. Now you can get all this great stuff on, like, that's one of the things that this generation has, is all these amazing learning and, you know, like, educational tools that you can get online for free.
Yeah.
You know, that's no longer an expense. But I mean, when I was, I never thought of TED as an expense. TED was never an expense. TED was a joy. I used to offer TED more money.
I would always pay him more money.
Yeah.
I would have to write the check before I would go into his house. I'd write it when I was in my car, because if I was doing it there, he would, like, see how much. He's like, no, and he wouldn't.
Yeah, I wouldn't answer.
So I was like, I already wrote the check, man. And I'd leave the checkbook in the car. It's like, this is it. You got to take this.
Sorry, yeah.
And I make it for like twice as much, because he just charged insane.
$23.50.
Yeah, it was 20 when I first started going.
Yeah, but $23.50 when I ended. It was $23.50 for a lesson for an hour with TED. Okay, I just want to point out to anybody who doesn't understand how ridiculous that concept is. It's like, imagine that you got to sit in a room with, like, Mozart and Charlie Parker, John Coltrane, Miles Davis, and Debussy for an hour every week, and it cost you $23.
And it's not only that, but when I was 18, I was studying with, I studied for a while with a great guitar player in San Diego named Peter Sprague, who's one of the premier
amazing guitar,
you know, guitar players on the planet. And this was in 1982, 83, right around there. And he was charging $25 for a lesson, which was like, I was like, whoa, that's a lot of money for a lesson. But it was worth it because I really, you know, wanted to study with him. And now here, fast forward to, you know, when I first started taking lessons from Ted Green in 1995 was when I first started going. It was $20. He was charging $20. Mm-hmm. And I was like, there's something, you know, wrong here. You should just be the market value for what you're doing. First of all, is
what year was it? What was it?
That I started studying with Ted?
In 95?
95.
Because I started with Ted in 80. How old was it? I was 20. So like 81 or 82.
Yeah.
And it was $17.50.
Yeah.
So he only went up $2.50.
Well, yeah, because at the time that I think my last lesson with him was shortly before he died, and it was
$23.50.
Yeah. So yeah, he would go up, he would raise his rates like, you know,
50 cents
every couple of years, you know, but it's just like, well, first of all, the market value for what you're doing as an instructor is just a lot more than what you're charging. You're way under market, dude. And I would try and tell him, and he's like, well, you know, there's a lot of guys.
That was really good, by the way. The first part of that sounded like Ted.
Well, you know, there's a lot of guys.
That was awesome.
Really, really, really need what I have to offer and just can't afford it, man. And so I just want to be able to.
Oh, I'm getting goosebumps.
That's him, right?
That's freaking me out. You just freaked me out. That was awesome.
You know, man. But that brings up an interesting point because I know a lot of guys that are teaching and that were teaching even then, like in the 90s, and that were charging, you know, way more. You know, way more than that. And even now, like if I give a lesson, typically my rate is like around $75 for an hour lesson, you know, which I think is kind of pretty much right on the, you know, middle to lower end of what the
I had a problem with teaching actually for quite a while right after Ted died. Did not start giving lessons where I charge more until quite a few years after he passed.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I can't teach better than this guy.
Yeah.
I can't charge more than he's charging. And I don't feel like that's an equitable thing. But I mean, on the contrary, I think that, you know, like when people call me to do, you know, $1,500 gigs, like, you know me pretty well. And I'm doing.
Can you call to do $1,500 gigs?
50 to 100.
Oh, 50 to 100.
No. You know me pretty well. Like I have a gig where, you know, I basically subsidize the other guy's plan.
Yeah.
Like I'll play and I'm, you know, there's a shortfall between what the club's willing to pay
right.
and I pick it up
yeah.
because I don't want the guys who I'm hiring to play to have to pay for my need to play yeah. and be out there. And I do it because of love of playing and that it's yeah. just good to have a regular gig. But the point is that, you know, pay to play is also an issue. Like in L, and I live, you know, when I lived in New York and actually being in LA, one of the things that really always struck me was the pay to play attitude of the club owners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not paying you anything. Cozies, man. You know, the whole thing of like, you know, you got to generate enough people to come in here, yeah. or, you know, it's, yeah. we're not paying you anything. I did gigs with Jimmy Earle and Jeff Paris and Sergio Gonzalez where we walked out of Cozies with nothing.
Yeah.
You know, like $3 in our pocket.
I did a gig recently with Eric Valentine. It was my band. It was Eric Valentine on drums, Travis Carlton on bass, and Christian Almiron from New York was in, and he played keys, and Mitch Manker was playing. I mean, these are four of the best musicians in the world,
right?
You know, bar none,
right.
That you're ever going to find anywhere.
And what'd you guys make?
And we made zero.
We made zero.
We made nothing. There was nothing.
You walked out. Everybody yeah. had empty pockets.
Everyone had empty pockets.
Mm-hmm. Last night, I made a big whopping five.
Yeah,
$5.
$5. And I felt the guilt that was on me for like, you know, days afterwards was, yeah. it's like, you know, and I didn't have any money. If I would have had the money in my account, I just would have gone and, you know, here's $100.
But these guys are also cool that we're all professionals. I mean, they wouldn't have done the gig if they thought they, first of all.
They were, but I felt so horrible. I felt just awful. I felt awful. Yeah. I mean, I don't care that I'm making nothing. It was my gig. I was the leader on the gig. So, but, you know, and it was kind of short notice and it really didn't get advertised. Right? It was at the Potato and it was on Halloween and we played the second half of the night. And
so that's a lot of factors.
There's a lot of factors. And I thought, you know, but I mean, we had a blast. We had a great time. It was one of the funniest nights I've had.
Funniest or funnest?
Both.
Oh.
And in a long time. And it was great. And I really want to do it again with these guys as soon as I can. But yeah, but it's frustrating, you know, and then you get into the thing as a band leader because you want to pay these guys.
Yep.
But it's like, you know, but I'm not rich. I can't, you know,
Well, you saw this morning, right?
Yeah.
I have a gig where I have a conflict where I'm subsidizing the gig, and I had to call the club owner and say, hey, you know, I'm subbing out for 2 weeks because I got paying gigs and I can't afford it unless you're willing to subsidize the thing. And I had to trade him.
Yeah.
I had to trade the guy, me working, helping him getting some of the technology installed in his place because he's you know, upgrading the place. Yeah. So that a guy, essentially I'm working for this guy.
You're working off.
I'm working off. So yeah, what he has to pay so that I can sub a guy for the gig that I'm going, so I can go somewhere else and actually get paid properly to go do what I'm doing.
Yeah, it's weird too. I'm always interested in. Obviously, we're recording this in Hollywood, Florida, where the music scene is very different than it is in LA.
It's big time.
The local music scene there, and it seems like there's a certain cross section of the populace that comes out to listen to music, and like social media in a place like this actually still works, where if you advertise a gig on Facebook or you put it up, people will actually like, oh, I'm going to go check that out.
More often in the States, I think, except for the big, you know, metropolitan centers like New York or LA or Houston or places like that, I think that live music still has a viable outlet, although the money hasn't changed, that there's still a thriving hunger for people to see live music. I remember in Asheville, have you ever been to Asheville? Asheville, North Carolina.
Quite a few times.
I really liked Asheville. And I did a weekend where I was a guest lecturer at the university there. Mm-hmm. And I was walking around the town, and the artists that were coming through on a daily basis, that were coming through from Bonnie Raitt to Jean-Luc Ponty to, I mean, I it was just this insane Bobby McFerrin. And I mean, every day. And this is like, Asheville's like a small town.
It's a very small town, and it's kind of up in the hills.
But music
there's a real vibrant scene there. It's a real,
art and music were vibrant and daily. And I don't know what the money thing was for these kind of artists. You know, whether they're changing because there's not a lot of money in that area. But you know, there's still a desire for live music. There's still a desire to support it. You know, the question is how do we find a way to up the pay scale? So the question for you all out there is: what do you make when you're doing a gig? Are you willing to play for free? Are you willing to pay to play?
Are you making the same money in 2012 going into 2013?
If we make it to 2013.
Yeah, if the world doesn't end. If you are making in the mid 90s or the mid 80s, you know, for like small gigs.
Yeah.
You know, how are you subsidizing?
Yeah. How does it feel to make a $50 or $100 night gig, and what are you willing to do? In my girlfriend in France and I, we used to call them shitty gigs. And it's like, where do you draw the line on a shitty gig? Like, are you willing to go and be a jukebox for $50?
Casualties.
Yes. Yeah. Casualties. Yeah. So let us know, do us a favor, please, subscribe to the, there's a couple of ways you can actually connect to the show. So you can like us on Facebook, which is Guitar Talk with John and Jamie. You can go to our podcast and subscribe, which will automatically give you news and the audio updates, which is guitartalkpodcast.com. Or one of our preferences is you can go to iTunes and subscribe only to the audio podcast. And please post reviews on the iTunes page because it helps us get up in the rotation.
About how much you love us.
Oh, I wasn't going to pressure him on that.
Yeah. I'm pressuring you.
Okay. Okay. So you're pressured now. You love us. Only good reviews, please. And post on the blog, on the Facebook page. And we'll look forward to having a conversation with you guys about all things guitar. And boom, ga 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 ga. Yeah, I know, but I was bar talking. Get it? Bar talking.
You were 12, Tony.
I was bar talking. That was good. I think that's a good point. So later, thanks for supporting Guitar Talk, and we'll see you when we see you.
Goodbye.
Yes. Goodbye.